Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime, this is Case Closed. Thanks for joining me again this Wednesday. We'll hear first this week from Murder by Experts, an episode titled Two Can Die as Cheaply as One. This one aired April 17th, 1950. Then it's 5-Minute Mystery and Rocky Marino Evidence. We'll finish off with Crime Classics and Widow McGee and the Three Gypsies, their episode from April 28th, 1954.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, the noted mystery writer, Fred Halliday. Mr. Halliday is creator of the world-famous detective character, Michael Shane, author of 25 mystery novels, and whose latest work, This Is It, Michael Shane, has just been published.
Good evening. This is Brett Halliday. Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective story writers. Tonight, our guest expert is the noted mystery novelist, Harold Q. Masur. From his vast knowledge of the field of mystery, Mr. Masur, with tongue in cheek, has chosen a light and fast-moving comedy mystery by that very witty writer, Milton Lewis. And now we present Lawson Zerbe and Marilyn Erskine in Two Can Die as Cheaply as One.
The name's Duke, Johnny Duke. You'll find me listed in the classified phone book under Detective Service. If there's anything I hate, it's violence, especially to myself. Of late, so many characters have showered me with blows that Susan, my slightly gorgeous wife, has given up calling me the Eye and refers to me now as the Black Eye. You have only to take that last case of mine to see what I mean. It all began on a beautiful spring day. Susan and I were standing in front of our apartment house waiting for a cab. Now, in New York, there must be at least 5,000 cabs, and this one, out of 5,000, had to come along.
Taxi, mister?
Yeah. Get in, baby. 34th Street and Fifth Avenue.
Right.
Oh, Johnny, what a lovely day. I don't see why we ever tolerate winter when we can get days like this.
Yes. And for once, I'm without a case.
That won't last long.
Oh, yes, it will. Darling, I'm seriously thinking of quitting this racket.
And let a crime wave loose in our fair city?
Well, I don't want to see any more corpses. I don't want any more beautiful murderesses throwing themselves at me. I don't want a jitterbug between bullets anymore.
This happens once every year. Mm-hmm. You'll get over it.
Not this time, Duchess. Now, look at me. Every week, I nearly get killed. Every week, I get conked on the head 2 or 3 times like a bell. I'm in a rut.
Hey, do you mind if I take Fifth Avenue?
Not at all, driver. But why do you want it?
One sees more chipper chicks on Fifth Avenue when one must wait for a red light.
And by all means, take Fifth.
I could tell you he was a man after my own heart the minute I lamped you.
Really? How did you know he was fond of chipper chicks?
Oh, that's easy, madam. I just seen a pin-up tomato that was with him.
Why, thank you. What a lovely cab you have, driver.
Yeah? Hey, you believe in sunlight?
Only in the daytime. Why?
On account of I want to slide the roof back, like this. Yeah, you can have sunbeams at no extra cost.
Oh, thank you.
You know, sunlights are very healthful and also ultra.
Also what?
Ultra. You know, ultra this, ultra that, ultra expensive, ultra dumb. Ultra.
Now, what's so ultra about sunlight?
Ultraviolet rays, of course. You don't seem to understand me, so I'll have to give you a lecture in 10 or 15 minutes.
We heard about sunlight, Tootsie. Say, is that really your name?
Certainly. Who else would want a name like that? Lots of people think it's very funny.
Why?
How could a guy with a puss like mine be a Tootsie? Hey, get over to the side, Jacob!
Mr. Tootsie, we feel that heaven can wait. Won't you please take it easy?
I am. It's them other guys who are always getting in one's way. But don't worry. This cab's falling apart anyway. And if we crash, we'll be killed instantly with no suffering. So sit back and relax.
Johnny, Johnny, what's the matter?
Oh. Hey, shh. What's he yelling for? I didn't hit no trucks yet.
Something socked me on the head.
Oh, you got that kind of a wipe too, huh?
It's something that came through the open roof of the cab. Even when I'm not on a case, I'm not safe.
Was this it, dear?
It must be.
It's an envelope. Johnny, darling, look what's inside.
Well, what is it?
It's an antique bracelet. Look at those stones. It must be worth scads and scads of money.
Why don't things like that ever fall on my head? Hey, I'll let you split it with me, happy. You can give me my half in cash.
Oh, can I?
Certainly. What can I do with half a bracelet?
Give him a check, Johnny.
Oh, nuts. You both know this bracelet must be returned.
Don't be silly, dear. It'll go perfectly with my new dress. Besides, how will you ever find the owner?
There's a name on this envelope. James Maxwell, importer. Well, the address is one of the office buildings we just passed.
Well, all I can say is that anyone who throws a bracelet like this at a perfectly innocent head doesn't deserve to get it back. And besides, I want it.
Sure, finders keepers, losers weepers.
That's right, Johnny. And didn't you just say you were in a rut?
Well, what's that got to do with it?
If you return it, you'll probably find out it was stolen by some beautiful siren who murdered a half dozen people to get it.
Yeah, and she'll probably try to murder me to get it back. I'll bet she worked with a cutthroat accomplice I'll have to arrest before I'm killed.
See why you shouldn't give it back? Why, you're dead already.
And they'll probably murder me just because I'm your wife and I know who the killers are.
See, you're both dead already.
And if I return it, I'll spend this beautiful day bleeding in strange apartments, being mauled around, getting kicked in the head, having my teeth knocked out, getting back into the same monotonous routine of mayhem and murder.
That's right, dear. Don't you see why we should keep it?
Yes. Darling, I've made up my mind. Tootsie, turn around.
What are we going to do?
Why, return it, of course.
James Maxwell, importer. That's the office, dear.
Yeah, come in.
Try to make it snappy, darling. Remember, Tootsie's waiting downstairs in his cab.
Seems to be no one here.
Well, try that inner office, darling.
Excuse me, miss. We'd like to see...
Johnny, what's the matter with her?
I don't know. She seems asleep. At her desk.
But don't touch her.
Oh, but Susan, I said... Steady, baby. Look, she's been murdered. Two slugs in places where they count.
I knew we should have kept that bracelet. Oh, if you'd only listen to
me. Now, that open window in back of her faces a street. She or the killer must have thrown it out there and it landed in our cab.
Don't move. Either of you.
Hello?
You both do exactly as I tell you or you'll get a bullet in your brain.
Do as the man says, dear. You know, your brain isn't large enough to hold bullets, darling.
What's the idea?
I'll take that bracelet.
Bracelet? What bracelet?
He must have wandered into the wrong place.
Give me that bracelet.
Humor him, dear. He's obviously a homicidal maniac of the crazy type.
Yeah. What's the racket, pal? How'd you know I had it?
I know why she was killed. I know who killed her. And I know exactly what I'm going to do about it.
He's a smart murderer, Johnny. He knows a lot. Oh, take that gun away from Johnny's head. You'll muss his hair.
I'm going to do more than that, madam. I'm going to kill him. Now.
Oh, Johnny, it's Tootsie.
What Tootsie?
This Tootsie, pal.
No.
Ah. That was a nice ride for an underdeveloped guy.
Thanks. Susan, are you all right?
Yes, dear. His shots went wild. I've got his gun and the bracelet. It's lucky you came in, Tootsie.
Well, I was getting impatient down there. You shouldn't keep me waiting like that. You'll run up a frightful bill. Oh, who's the dead doll?
We don't know yet.
Searching him, huh? Do I get half the take?
Susan, baby, this guy is Mr. James Maxwell. He's coming out of it.
My head.
Get up, Maxwell. Now, explain it simply so my childish mind can grasp it. Why did you murder her? Come in.
I'll open it, dear. Yes, what do you... No! No, don't! Oh.
I've got a gun, gentlemen. Now, will you please tell a poor innocent girl what this is all about? And play no tricks, or you'll be covered in your own gore.
I told you you should have stood in bed with that bracelet.
Who owns the female I hit over the head with the hat rag?
I do. She's my wife.
You'd better pick her up. Someone might step on her.
Oh, Johnny, buy me a new head.
I'll help you up, baby. You'll be all right.
Thank you, Blanche. You came just in time.
Do you know her?
Oh, yes, Blanche and I are old friends. Just who are you?
I'm Johnny Duke. This is my wife, Susan, and this is Tootsie, our taxi driver. Well, what's the payoff? Are you going to kill us again?
I certainly am, if you're going to hurt Jimmy. Did you kill that girl?
No, we just wandered in here. What are you doing here, Susan?
Oh, just looking at this hat rack. Is this what you hit me with, Blanche?
Yes. I heard you in here, and I thought you were harming Jimmy. If I hurt you, I'm terribly sorry, dear.
Oh, that's all right. I was just trying to figure out how you used the hat rack. Well, you must have swung it like this.
No, don't! Oh!
I've got the gun back, Johnny.
Oh, my brains are aching.
If I hurt you, I'm terribly sorry, dear.
That was lovely. You'd make a good female blanksmith.
Thank you, Tootsie. Drag her to that chair, Mr. Maxwell. That's right. Now we'll go on where we left off.
Why'd you kill her, Maxwell?
I didn't kill her. I was with Blanche all day. Wasn't I, dear?
That's right. He was at my place.
What were you doing?
We were playing Ring Around a Rosie in my living room, dear.
What's your full name?
Blanche Werby. Why?
Did you ever see this bracelet before?
I can tell you about that bracelet. It belonged to my partner, William Baldwin. It's worth a fortune. At least $80,000.
I told you we should have kept it.
Where is Mr. Baldwin now, Mr. Maxwell?
I don't know. He disappeared 6 months ago and was never seen again. He had that bracelet with him.
Who's that dead girl?
She's Miss Ruth Perkins, my secretary.
Oh. She evidently threw the bracelet out the window. How'd it get here?
I haven't the faintest idea, Mr. Duke. I'm sorry I lost my head before. I thought you killed her when I came in before. I heard you talking about the bracelet. I thought you murdered her to get it. Whoever gave that bracelet to Ruth Perkins knows who my partner is.
This looks like quite a case.
Yes, Duchess. And for once, we're going to let the police solve it. Call them up, darling. We'll probably be tied up with them until evening. There goes our lovely day.
And that should teach you a good lesson. Next time you get hit on the head with an $80,000 bracelet, you keep it. Police headquarters, please.
Come in, Tootsie. Make yourself at home.
Ah, thanks. Sure nice of you to invite me in for cocktails.
Well, that's the least we can do after taking up your time all day. You sit there with Johnny. I'll go in and mix them.
Now, about the murder of that Perkins dame, I got a theory. Only it don't make sense.
Tootsie, let's not start talking about murders. I've decided to seek a gentler profession.
Oh, that's why you won't take the case?
Right. Now, we won't mention it again, will we?
By all means, we certainly shall not even whisper about it. You think James Maxwell killed her?
No, the gun we took away from Maxwell was a different caliber from the one that killed her. I think... Let's talk about baseball, huh?
Certainly. The Brooklyn Dodgers will win the World Series this year.
What makes you so sure?
I live in Brooklyn. Do you think William Baldwin was bumped off, too? The police said his daughter also disappeared.
Yeah, I think they were both killed. It's funny, there should be no identification in that secretary's purse. Oh, nuts, don't lead me.
Hey, I believe that was your loving wife in distress.
Yes, in the kitchen, come on.
All right.
If they try to do anything to Susan, Susan. Hey, Susan, baby.
Is she dead?
No, someone tried to garrote her. Here, help me get this cord off her neck. Hurry.
All right, there. That does it.
Susan, what happened?
I don't know. Someone must have come through the delivery entrance. Felt the cord around my neck, and that's all I know.
Tootsie. There's a gun in that old sugar bowl. Take and go down that delivery exit.
I got it. So long, Jenny.
Susan, darling, are you okay?
I'm feeling much better now. Johnny, why should anyone want to do a thing like that?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's got something to do with that bracelet.
Johnny, darling, you better take this case and solve it before we're all bumped off. I know it may all be just too annoying for a jaded sleuth like you, but it's better to be bored to death than murdered.
You win, baby.
I thought I would. That's why I took these things out of a dead girl's purse. They're two addresses on different sheets of paper. One's the address of one Samson Everest, and the other is the dead girl's home address.
Well, there ain't no sign of any Garrettes out there, Johnny. He must have got away.
Now listen, Tootsie. We're going to find this murderer, and you're going to help us. I want you and Susan to visit one Samson Everest. I'm going to poke around Ruth Perkins' place. Now let's get going.
Welcome to the Solid Comfort Funeral Parlors, madam. Samson Everest at your service.
How do you do, Mr. Everest? I'm Mrs. Johnny Duke.
How do you do? You've seen our advertisement for a bargain in funerals, no doubt. We're running a sale, you know. Is it for someone close to you, your husband, perhaps?
No. In fact, we didn't know you were an undertaker at all. Oh, by the way, this is Tootsie.
Hiya, Samson.
How do you do, sir? You remind me of a very dear, dear friend of mine.
Yeah?
Yes. I buried him 5 years ago. Ah, yes. whom do you wish to put to rest, Mrs. Duke?
Well, no one exactly.
Come, come now. Surely you can think of someone. A sale like this doesn't come along every day. Dear me, no. Why, two can be buried as cheaply as one.
I just want to ask you a few questions. Do you know someone named Ruth Perkins?
Is she among the living or dead?
The dead.
I've never buried anyone by that name.
She was murdered today. Why would your name and address be in her purse?
Perhaps she knew she was going to be killed and wanted to get in on our bargain. Really, Mrs. Duke, you should take advantage of this. It's truly a cutthroat sale.
Just what do you get for your money?
For only $75, you get a hearse, fresh lilies, mm-hmm. two limousines, and a plot in an exclusive cemetery.
Yeah? What kind of coffin?
Oh, a beauty. So comfortable to lie upon, you'll never want to wake up.
Excuse me, Tootsie. Mr. Everest, do you know anyone named William Baldwin?
But of course. Dear Mr. Baldwin, one of my best customers.
Did you bury him?
No, but he ordered a tomb from me. I had it built in the Gay Departure Cemetery, overlooking the loveliest little pond. It's really a gorgeous place to go when you're dead.
Oh, I'm sure it is. But why did Mr. Baldwin have it built?
To rest in when he passed on. Mr. Baldwin was a man of great foresight. In fact, his daughter was here only yesterday.
His daughter? As a customer or a victim?
Oh, she was quite alive, I think. Of course she was. She talked to me. She wanted to know where her father's tomb was.
Why?
She was going out there to inspect it. A very devoted child, I must say. She wanted everything to be just right for the day when her father would move in.
Really? Where is Gay Departure Cemetery?
Just out of town in Westchester.
Come on, Tootsie. That's where we're going.
Just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Everest, just what else do you get for your 75 bucks?
Two pallbearers, an organ music, mm-hmm. a granite tombstone, a smooth ride with professional chauffeurs.
Has the hearse got white tires?
My dear man, all our hearses have white tires. That goes without saying. Are you interested?
Yeah, I sure would like one of them. And at that price, too. The only trouble is, I ain't dead.
Well, we all live in hope, my friend. The sale lasts another week. Maybe you'll be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, but I doubt it. I never have any luck. Shall we vamoose, Susan?
See the tomb, Tootsie. It's right near the pond.
How picturesque. Susan, don't you think we should have told the caretaker to let us in?
I didn't want to wake him up. Besides, I don't think he'd permit us to come here at this hour. Get out your flashlight.
There. Yep, this is the tomb. Here rests William Baldwin. Shall I ring the bell?
You don't have to. Someone forced open the door.
Huh? You think some of these ghosts is burglars?
If they are, they'll be arrested. Come in. You don't have to take your hat off, Tootsie.
Well, I've never been in no tombs before. Hey, it's very cozy.
Turn your flashlight on that coffin.
Okay. Oh, the coffin's open and it's being slept in.
Yes. There's a college clasp-in on his vest. Pick it up and see if there's a name on the back.
Yeah. William G. Baldwin, class of 1902. Hey, this is Baldwin.
Yes, and he was murdered. Look at those two bullet holes. The killer is very sweet. He not only murders his victim, but puts him in his tomb.
Or rip the guy's jacket.
I don't know. Yes, I do, of course. I'll bet the bracelet was hidden in that jacket. Oh, come on, Tootsie, we have to get out of here. I want to phone Johnny.
Okay, but shh, not so loud.
You're liable to wake him up.
Yes, Inspector Farrell. Yeah, I relieved the flatfoot you had here at the Perkins girl's place. I'm about finished now. How about James Maxwell's alibi? Airtight, huh? Well, what's Blanche Werby's address? Wait a second, Inspector. There's someone in the hall in trouble. Goodbye, Inspector. I'll call you back.
Help me!
Who shot you?
Oh, I don't know. Someone in the shadows in the hall. Don't leave me. I'm frightened.
I'm just going to put you on the bed and call a doctor.
No. No, doctor. I won't do any good.
Who are you?
Ruth Perkins.
Ruth Perkins? But that's impossible. She was killed this afternoon. I don't lie.
I'm not lying. I was out of town. Oh, don't go away.
Did you see the evening papers?
Yes. That girl in the office who was killed, she's Helen Baldwin.
William Baldwin's daughter?
Yes. The one who disappeared after her father did. I knew her. I used to work for her father.
Go on. You know who killed her?
I think...
Miss Perkins, I... Oh. Dead. Hello? Oh, Susan. Yes. Go on. Baldwin, huh? Okay, baby. I'm going over to Blanche Werby's joint at 889 East Drive. Bring Tootsie along and meet me there. Yes, goodbye.
Won't you have a drink, Steve?
All right, thank you, Blanche. Think I can use one.
Here you are. What makes you think Jimmy and I were lying about being in this apartment when that girl was killed?
I think Jimmy killed her.
But I told you...
I know. You were playing Ring Around a Rosie.
Right here in my living room. Shall I show you how it's done?
Oh, I've played it in my time.
Not the way I play it. You be the Rosie. I'll make the ring around you with my arms. Like this.
This is a new way of playing it.
Uh-huh. And it's some fun. You look startled.
Naturally. I've never been a Rosie before.
You didn't touch your drink, Steve.
Blanche, would you like a new and thrilling experience?
Uh-huh. That's my hobby. What is it?
Be murdered.
Oh? By you?
By James Maxwell. You're next on his list. He's trying to kill everyone who can prove him guilty. My wife, the Perkins girl, Helen Baldwin. Next, you.
Oh, you've got a morbid imagination. What you need is more ring around a rosy. Oh, dear. Have your drink while I answer it.
Hello, Blanche.
Oh, Jimmy. Come in. Look who's here.
Johnny Duke. Well, I'm glad to see you.
Hello, Maxwell. You're lucky Inspector Farrell let you go free.
Well, he knew he couldn't keep me. No evidence, you know.
Yes, that drink was plenty strong. I feel awfully... awfully funny.
What's the matter with him?
Gave him a knockout drop. He's getting very wise, Jimmy. You know what he told me? He said you tried to kill me.
The little fool.
I told him he was out of his mind.
What are you laughing about?
Well, it's so funny.
Not for you. As it turns out, he's 100% right.
Jimmy, put that gun down.
No, Blanche. It was very nice of you to lie and alibi me. But now I can't trust you. So you're going to die.
No.
Now.
Oh, I've been killed.
Take it easy, Blanche. I shot him in the shoulder. He'll be okay. He didn't even have a chance to fire his gun.
Oh, you weren't out.
No. Mm-mm. I dropped my drink under the pillow of your sofa. I hope it doesn't stay.
Johnny, darling, we came as fast as we could.
Come in, baby. Hiya, Tootsie.
Okay.
You came just in time to hear Blanche give us a complete confession. How about it, Blanche?
Okay. He phoned me this afternoon and begged me to alibi him. I did. I loved him. Then I went to the office. The rest, you know.
Johnny, darling, how'd you do it? How'd you make her confess?
It was easy, baby. All I had to do was play a little game called Ring Around the Rosie, dear. There's no place like home. And so peaceful.
Johnny, you still haven't explained.
Well, it adds up to this, baby. Maxwell killed Baldwin to get that bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that Baldwin had it sewed into his suit.
And Helen Baldwin, suspecting what happened, disappeared in order to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
She found out that her father's body was in the tomb.
Right. Now, she must have known where the bracelet was, too. She came back with it, accused Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled a gun. She threw the bracelet out the window.
Where it can't you. But why did Maxwell lie and tell us that the dead girl in his office was his secretary, Ruth Perkins?
To protect himself and stall for time. If we knew who she was, our suspicion of Maxwell would be strengthened. He wanted to carry out the bluff by killing Ruth Perkins. Mm. They made a mess of that job, though.
Yeah, but what good would that bluff have done him?
Well, at the time Baldwin disappeared, his daughter told the police that there was some bad feeling between her father and Maxwell. Maxwell wouldn't have had a chance if the police knew the dead girl was Helen Baldwin. Well, that's why he removed her identification papers and things before we stumbled on the body.
Johnny, darling, do you still feel you're fed up being a detective?
Murder, mayhem, and monkey shines. It's the same old thing. I'm bored.
Come here. Still bored. Still feel you're in a rut.
Mm-hmm. But, who says I want to get out of it? Come here, baby.
And so the curtain falls on Two Can Die as Cheaply as One, which was chosen by guest expert Harold Q. Messer. Mr. Messer is author of the recently published mystery novel, Suddenly a Corpse. Next week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a drama of a young newspaper reporter who covers the biggest story of his career, only to find murder dogging his footsteps. As selected for your approval by one of the world's foremost detective story writers. Until then, this is your host, Brett Halliday, hoping you'll be with us again next week at this time.
Two Can Die as Cheaply as One was written by Milton Lewis. In our cast were Lawson Zerbe, Marilyn Erskine, George Matthews, Gene Ellen, Ralph Bell, John Gibson, and Bob Donnelly. Music is under the direction of Emerson Buckley, composed by Richard DuPage. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in our story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. We welcome all comments on this program, Murder by Experts. All letters should be addressed to Murder by Experts, care of the Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. Bill Tonkin speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
And stole some valuable evidence against Rocky Marino that I was going to turn over to you tomorrow.
What sort of evidence?
Enough of the kind to send Marino to the chair.
Great Scott, Davis. If I could do that, I'd win the election hands down.
Don't let my publisher know, or I'll be looking for a new typewriter. You better come over here right away. My secretary got a look at the man who broke open my safe.
Right away, Davis. This is the break I've been looking for.
This is Miss Mitchell, my secretary.
Can you tell me exactly what happened here tonight, Miss Mitchell?
I knew about the evidence Mr. Davis had against Marino, of course, and I came here tonight to retype the case summary that Mr. Davis had prepared.
Yes, Croydon, I had been working on this exposé for several months. Tonight it was to be finished. Tomorrow you would have been handed the election on a silver platter.
We've got to recover those papers.
I know what the thief looked like.
Excellent. Now, please proceed.
He was rather a tall man. He walked with a limp. The strange part of it is that he didn't wear a hat.
What was the color of his hair?
To tell the truth, I didn't notice. There wasn't too much light in the room.
Where were you when all this eyewitness stuff was going on, Miss Mitchell?
Well, I had just opened the wall safe here when I heard muffled footsteps in the hall. I knew it couldn't be Mr. Davis, as he had just phoned me a minute or two before that.
That's right, Court.
I just had time to push the safe door shut and run behind the sofa there when he came in.
Did he go directly to the safe?
Yes, I didn't have time to shove the picture back over it. I was afraid to show my face too much, so I stayed hidden most of the time behind the couch.
How long did you have to stay there?
Oh, he worked on the safe about 20 minutes. And then he finally got it open, took out the papers, and ran out.
I say. Tell me, Miss Mitchell, how long have you worked for Mr. Davis?
About a year. Why?
Because you're out of a job. Your story is nothing but a pack of lies.
Flaws in Miss Mitchell's story called the district attorney's suspicion. In a moment, we'll know, but first...
Explain the inconsistencies in your story. First you told me the thief walked with a limp, and then you told me he ran from the room. But the big lie in your fairy tale, Miss Mitchell, came when you said you just had time to push the safe door shut and then hide behind the couch. If that was so, the thief never would have had to work 20 minutes to open the safe. It never could have been locked. No safe locks unless the combination is turned or a key is used. Come on, Davis. You've got a front-page story on my re-election as soon as Miss Mitchell returns the evidence.
Miss
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That was Aaron Leathers demonstrating a broom. A broom he had made with his own hands. Aaron was a gypsy, and he knew the broom-making secret handed down from the master broomers of Romani. Demonstration. The floor of Mrs. McGee's parlor in her cottage, right outside of Rutland, Vermont. The year, 1850. And Aaron was very proud of his handiwork. Watch.
Oh, he...
Watch.
Oh, he... Oh, look. Someone threw a doll through the window, Aaron. It's dressed like a gypsy. And its head's all twisted. Like it was dead. And see, it looks like you, Aaron.
Tonight, my report to you on Widow McGee and the Three Gypsies, a Vermont Fandango.
Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Not very many people migrate from Karga, Egypt, to Vermont, but the Leathers family did by way of Budapest. Of course, it took a few hundred years to get from one place to the other, but the Leathers family was gypsy, and they had time on their hands. So they migrated. They finally arrived in 1815, and they found the country good, lakes and mountains and a good source of fine New England straw, with which to weave their baskets and make their brooms. And by the time mid-century rolled around, the pride and joy of the tribe were three cousins.
I'm Eben. I weave baskets, and I wear a gold ring in my ear. I like to eat, and I like to walk in the sun.
I'm Aaron. Brooms are my specialty, and I wear gold rings in both my ears. My eyes are blue. My side of the family came through Ireland. I like nights of a small moon best.
Hi, I'm Noah, and I'm very nimble. I like to jump over things and turn somersaults. Watch. And you noticed, of course, my hands were behind my back. I like a plump moon.
Eben, Aaron, and Noah. And there was a ritual they had. There was a certain night each year when the sky was orange and purple, when they would come together...
He's nimble, and still he's always the last.
Noah will be here, for listen.
Hello, cousins.
You're late. I could have stayed at home and eaten another shard of grass. You're always late.
Yes, I know. But now, let's get on with it. Let's have our meeting. Eben?
Yes. The knife is sharp.
Give me your arm, Cousin Eben. Now yours, Cousin Aaron. And now mine. Now, cousins, we'll press together, each to the other, the small wounds, and make our oath.
Gojun.
Goab.
Sadnak.
Sitri.
Ram.
Crochel.
Ororas.
And so once again we swear it, to keep pure the gypsy blood, to wed only with gypsy maidens, on pain of death.
On pain of death.
Well, Aaron?
On pain of death.
Right. And remember it. Good night, cousins.
Aaron?
Yes, Cousin Eben.
Look at him. Cousin Noah is very nimble, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
Aaron, have a sandwich? Grouse.
No. No, thank you, cousin.
Aaron...
What is it, Cousin Eben?
Nice order you had this morning from Widow McGee.
Huh? Oh, yes.
I think you'd like to know about Widow McGee, as she was a young widow and very beautiful and affectionate. And because she was these things, a cruel rumor had it that in her garden, often, was seen a sprite dancing in the starlight in a kind of pavon to the moon. A cruel rumor had it also that this dancing sprite was none other than Widow McGee. It should be mentioned also that her husband had perished from a strange malady. From a robust man, he just seemed to dwindle. A medical fact which was ascribed to his journeys in the tropics as a young sailor. Such was the young widow's misfortune. Is it any wonder, then, that the next morning, when that happened, when her door was tapped upon, she immediately donned her finest smile, threw open the door for glad companion's sake.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Gypsy. Come in. Come in.
I've brought your two brooms and your baskets three.
Oh, what blue eyes are yours in the morning light.
I've tied the brooms in a special way, I know.
And what black curls are yours.
And I've weaved a special weave for the baskets.
And swarthy skin, and ears pierced with gold.
Where shall I put them?
Where you stand. And your name is Aaron, you told me yesterday.
Yes.
Oh, such a name. Such a wizard of a name. Are you a wizard, Aaron? Gypsy Aaron? Is there darkness in you, Aaron?
What do you mean, ma'am?
Oh, don't ma'am me, Aaron. Rachel, I am.
Rachel.
Is there darkness in you? Do you gamble in the gardens on starry nights and sing strange hymns in a strange tongue?
Well,
of course you do, swarthy lad. Gypsy lad. Fawn.
Fawn?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've got to go.
But you'll come back tomorrow.
Are you placing another order?
Rachel.
Rachel?
Two brooms and a basket.
Tomorrow.
Say what's on your mind, Cousin Noah.
Just a few steps ahead till we'll reach our secluded place where the blood vows are made.
What mystery is this, Cousin, and the solemn look upon you? Tell me why you woke me from my cabin.
Now.
Well?
You've noticed it too, haven't you, Cousin?
Noticed what?
Of Cousin Aaron.
What of him?
How he moons.
Moons?
As if a spell of love were on him.
Love? Well, then, is that not good? For surely there are too few of us, and since he is in love, therefore he will take wife, and where there is wife, there will be gypsy toddlings.
Do you know a gypsy maid named Rachel?
Rachel?
Rachel.
No.
I have bent low to his sleeping. I have heard him say the name Rachel McGee. And more.
What?
I've followed him.
Why?
For the reason of his moaning, and his order book is fat with the name of Widow McGee.
Oh?
By this time, the widow has a broom for each corner of each room and a basket for each garment.
Well, then Aaron flourishes.
And forgets his vow.
Oh.
You remember the vow, cousin?
Of course.
Then say it with me yet once again.
For what reason?
To reaffirm.
Oh, yes.
Goshen.
Goap.
Sabnock,
Sea-tree,
Raum,
Kroshel,
Orobas. And therefore you know what has to be done.
Kill Aaron?
If he has love for one outside the tribe, for so is the vow you have just said.
Yes.
I will follow him and I will make sure.
Yes.
And one thing more.
What?
This. This thing I have buried here.
A doll. An image of Aaron.
I buried here. Let it be immersed in death. Let it become of Aaron.
Yes. Well, my supper's waiting. I'm starved.
Good night, cousin.
Good morning. Good morning, Gypsy.
Hello, Rachel. Hello, love. Oh, Rachel. Oh. Rachel.
Your lips had the taste of wild berries.
Rachel.
Because you were wild.
I want to show you something.
What?
The broom I brought you this morning. It's a special one.
Oh, Aaron.
I cured the straw in a different way. So watch.
Oh. Oh. Oh, look. Someone threw a doll through the window, Aaron. It's dressed like a gypsy. It looks like you. And its head is all twisted. Aaron. What does this mean, Aaron? Aaron, why do you stand there with head bowed down and...
I must die.
What?
I must die.
Oh, Aaron, what are you talking about? We're going to get married.
No.
Why not?
I've been coming here each day for nearly 2 months now, bringing brooms and baskets. And I fear for nearly that long, I've been followed. And my love for you seen and my proposal of marriage heard.
I don't understand.
And now this doll. I must die.
But why?
I've broken a terrible vow.
Oh, Aaron, stop that nonsense and... Come here. Aaron.
Why not? I have nothing more to lose.
And he told her many things. Strange gypsy lore of other nights, the dark forests of Mudyar country, the mountain lakes of Tuscany, and the singing stone of a lost and dim place in the Urals. And he taught her strange songs, forbidden melodies of doomed gypsy kings, and what croonings to make to turn off a star. And she looked into the moon pools that were his eyes, and she wept. And later...
I'll never forget you, gypsy lad. Never.
And she knew it was time for him to go.
Fare you well.
Cousins? You need not signal, cousins. I know you are there, nor will I flee from you. For I have made a vow and I have broken it, and I must suffer for it, and I must die.
A gypsy named Aaron Leathers was found in the woods a few days later. His head had been twisted with such violence that it had snapped his neck. Inquiries were made and the police decided he had met with an accident of undetermined origin. It was also noted that for nearly a week after the occurrence, no sprites danced in Mrs. McGee's garden.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Saturday night at the Star's address, you're in for plenty of hard-riding adventure on Gunsmoke, presented by CBS Radio for the pleasure of Western fans. Gunsmoke takes us back to pioneer Dodge City, where you will follow the latest thrilling exploits of United States Marshal Matt Dillon. Saturday night, Gunsmoke, on most of these same stations. And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on Widow McGee and the Three Gypsies, a Vermont Fandango.
They were cutting Vermont granite into tombstones in 1850, more than usual, for this was the time of Mad Gerson Hayward's raiders, who swarmed across Lake Champlain into the United States to create havoc and devastation and death, only to drown to a man trying to get back into Canada. And over the graves grew the red clover, for this was the time of spring and the lark, and this was the time of the lamb. And outside of Rutland, a gypsy boy named Aaron Leathers was buried too, according to the rites of his tribe, buried and almost as soon forgotten, except for the few words that were being spoken about him.
He deserved to die.
He did deserve to die.
He broke a vow.
His death then right. And
twisting his neck was easy.
It is right that I helped.
For what he did, loved not one of the tribe.
Is rightly dead.
We'll speak no more of it.
Then good night, cousin.
Good night.
See how he runs and leaps? My cousin is indeed nimble. Well, time to eat.
Everybody would remark how nimble Noah was. Grace personified, jumping and leaping and tumbling and pirouetting. Some people would choose the long way home or the short way home, but he would always choose the hard way home so he could jump and leap and tumble. Well, I just thought I'd mention it. Cousin Eben, however, was a plodder, a door-to-door man, as it were. So Cousin Aaron, being now dead, he took over his route, and it was inevitable then that this happened.
Good morning. Good morning, Gypsy.
Come in. I sell brooms and baskets.
How dark your eyes are.
This broom now. See how it makes the dust fairly fly?
And how curly your hair.
And this basket woven so tight with willows that tea could be poured into it and it would hold.
And swarthy skin. And one golden earring.
Ma'am?
Rachel.
Rachel?
Yes.
Would you care to place an order, Rachel?
Oh, I have all the brooms I need, and baskets, too.
Oh.
Once there was a gypsy boy named Aaron.
My name is Eben.
He was gentle, and he spun a spell about me.
My name is Eben.
Eben. Oh, such a name. Such a wizard of a name. Are you a wizard, Eben?
May I put these brooms and baskets down?
I want you to. Aaron used to tell me stories of far places and weave spells.
Once upon a time in far Samarkand, that's very far, in a magical place, a very magical place where spells were woven, lived a handsome prince.
Oh, my.
He was so handsome that it was said that each time he walked the golden streets, a maiden's heart would burst.
Oh, my.
Hi.
Hello, Cousin Noah.
Been waiting long, Cousin Eben?
No, not too long.
Know why I asked you to meet me here?
Why?
You've been moaning.
Moaning?
Like a man in love.
Have I?
Like Aaron used to do.
How do you mean?
Seen you weave a green wheat into a basket so loose it wouldn't hold a watermelon. I call that moaning.
Well, you're wrong, Cousin.
I hope I'm wrong, Cousin. Because of the oath, because of the vow.
Well, you're wrong, Cousin.
And there's no girl who has your heart?
None.
And if there was a girl who had your heart, she'd be a gypsy.
She'd be a gypsy.
And not an outsider.
And not an outsider. Cousin?
Yes, Cousin?
Why are you looking at me like that?
Like what?
As if you think I'm lying to you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, 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 no.
Which was in itself a lie, for Noah didn't believe Cousin Eben from there to Burlington and back again. He had seen the symptoms before, and just to make sure, on a warm night when Cousin Eben slept beneath a tree, Noah, in his quiet, graceful, and agile way, sneaked up upon him and put his ear close. And this is what he heard.
Rachel. Rachel McGee. How I love you.
Then Noah sneaked away again and into the clearing where the blood oaths had been made. And there he fashioned a doll. It was a straw doll, and the resemblance between it and Eben was remarkable. Then he broke the doll's neck. The next day, Eben, not knowing that Noah had fashioned a doll, went back to his route. And what was his first stop? Good guess.
Come in, come in.
Hello, Rachel. Hello, love. And what have we for breakfast today?
Oh, strawberries and goat's cream and bacon smuggled from Canada and turkey eggs and maple syrup to sop and spoon.
Oh, good, good.
Oh, this is hardly any breakfast at all to what you will have when we get married.
No.
I have a book with things written down in it to eat.
Have grass and milk.
What?
More milk.
Truly, Eben.
Truly what?
We will be wed.
I want to.
Oh, the banquets, the feasts.
Oh, good, good.
Eben.
Yes?
I have money and you'll never have to work anymore. You'll tell me stories and weave spells and I'll cook for you. Hardly will we need to step out of the door.
Good, good.
Eben.
Yes?
Do you love me, Eben?
With heart's desire.
What of the gypsy girls?
I like a lady with a blonde head of hair. One who cooks and looks...
Look, someone threw a doll through the window, Eben. It's dressed like a gypsy, and it looks like you. And its head is all twisted.
What?
Eben... I know what this means, Eben. I know why you stand there with your head bowed down. For look. See? Another doll, which was thrown through the same window when I stood here with the gypsy called Aaron. And later, oh, dread event, he was found with his neck twisted and dead, like this doll. And see how this new doll resembles you, Eben. I'll never forget you, gypsy lad. Never. Fare you well.
Noah? Noah, are you there? Noah? Noah, we must talk, Noah. Come to me and we'll talk.
Hi.
You made a doll, didn't you, Noah?
Yes, I did.
To look like me.
Yes, I did.
And you... twisted its neck.
Yes, I did.
And you threw it through Willa McGee's window.
Yes, I did.
And now?
You must die.
I don't want to.
The oath we took.
I don't want to die.
The blood oath.
I love the Willa McGee, and she has money, and I would give you much of it. Cousin?
A gypsy named Eben Leathers was found in the woods a few days later. His head had been twisted with such violence that it had snapped his neck. It got so that the people around Rutland would greet each other with such remarks as dead as last Monday's gypsy, and such remarks as, now don't get any dead gypsies underfoot, and such remarks as, more an expletive than anything else, well, snap my neck, which last may still be heard around the old pot-bellied stove down Vermont way. Again, the police shook their heads and the coroner jotted it down as a result of an accident of undetermined origin. Now, since cousins Aaron and Eben were dead, Noah had the broom and basket route all to himself. He diligently went from door to door. And when he came to Widow McGee's house...
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Gypsy.
Come in. I sell brooms and baskets.
How lithe you are. How like a reed and it's supple.
The broom now. You see how it's...
Oh, I don't need any brooms. Put it down.
Where?
Oh, any place. How curly is your hair.
Yes.
I watched you come onto the porch. How with grace. How you pranced and leaped.
I am nimble. Would you like to see?
I want to.
I'll put my hands behind my back and...
Watch out for the broom! To watch out for the broom. I told you. Gypsy. Gypsy boy. Oh. Oh, my. Look how your neck is twisted. As if... Almost as if...
As if his neck had been snapped. Which it was. Which killed him instantly. I would like to be able to tell you that Widow McGee was finally married, but I cannot. Rather, she took to dancing much more frequently in her garden, a small fandango she had learned from the boys. And one dark night, she died. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Widow McGee, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Sammy Hill was heard as Widow McGee, William Conrad as Eben, High Averback is Noah, and Shepard Menken is Aaron. Bob Lamond speaking. Here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Nuremberg, Germany, in the year 1820. That was the year four people got all hacked up right during Bock beer season. You can imagine the stir it caused, especially when they arrested Frau Baumler's hubby. It's listed in my files as Bunny Baumler, His Close Brush with Fame. Thank you. Good night.
Every weekday, for a delightful 90 minutes, CBS Radio resounds with the fun-making of Arthur Godfrey Time, starring the man people know and love as Mr. Unpredictable. And then every Friday night, out of these 450 daytime minutes, CBS Radio digests a fabulous hour of entertainment for nighttime audiences. Yes, Friday nights over most of these same stations, it's the Arthur Godfrey Digest, a one-hour concentrate of Godfrey and his gang at their very best. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
And so ends another episode of Case Closed. Hope you enjoyed the shows today. Find more old-time radio at relicradio.com. More from Case Closed, more from all the other shows. Links to everything else Relic Radio. Like to help support this and all the shows, keep it all going, you can do so from the website as well. Just click on the donation information button for information. Thank you very much to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime on Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.